Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition, the New Year's Week edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where I hope you had a blessed Christmas weekend. Yes, there was a lot of news. We had the terrible explosion and suicide bombing in Nashville with an RV owner, and we had the uncertainty of whether President Trump would sign the stimulus, COVID relief, and federal spending bill, which he did late last night. But we got through the holidays, and I'm sure we had some good cheer to go with it. We have our prayers and thoughts going out to those in Nashville trying to recover from all of the damage. Those poor small business owners who've already endured COVID all year, now seeing their businesses physically destroyed by a bomb, that we need to keep them in your prayers and thoughts and support them any way that you can. So today, we're going to do something special this week. Today, I have an original podcast with the great lawyer, talk show host, author, Larry Elder. He's here to talk about his new documentary, Uncle Tom, which is a very powerful movie about the rejection, the ostracization of conservative African-Americans in the African-American community. It's one of the hottest documentaries of the year, right up there with Amanda Milius's Plot to Get the President. And we thought today, we'd talk to Larry about what motivated him, what the reaction has been, what people are saying and doing to move the ball forward on this. It's a tremendous documentary. If you haven't seen it, please do. There are some really cogent examples from business people to political figures, all talking about the monolithism that's been imposed on the African-American community, the ostracization, if you dare to challenge liberal thinking in the African-American community, and a hopeful shift that we saw in the 2020 vote this year, where more minorities, Hispanic, Asians, and African-Americans tilted towards the Republican Party to Donald Trump. Larry talks about all of those things in this great interview. I'm really looking forward to it. And the rest of this week, we're going to pull out some of our favorite podcasts for the year. So Tuesday through Friday, we're going to do some of our favorites from 2020. Definitely Amanda Milius is going to be up there. I bet you a Devin Nunes or Ron Johnson slips in there. But we'll pull all that together for you and allow you to kind of enjoy the best hits of the year. And we'll be back with original programming next Monday, January 4th. I hope you have a blessed New Year's week, that the new year 2021 rings in with great hope and great aspiration and less trauma like the year 2020 has given us. It has been a difficult year, to say the least. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break here from our wonderful sponsors and advertisers. When we come back, first thing we're going to do, we're going to talk to Larry Elder about his new documentary, Uncle Tom. This is one you don't want to miss. We'll be right back. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust. And the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest. You've heard his syndicated radio show across the country. He's an author and a lawyer and one of the most popular documentarians of 2020. Larry Elder is joining the show. Larry, welcome back.
John, thank you so much for having me. I wish I could say I was a popular documentarian with our mainstream media, however.
Well, America has spoken, and we know how much people have loved this extraordinary documentary, Uncle Tom. And why don't we start? I always love to ask people, what gave you the inspiration to do this project? I mean, it's had a tremendous impact, but what inspired you to do it?
Well, a young director came to me named Justin Malone, who, by the way, happens to be white, and told me that he wanted to do a film called Uncle Tom, which I thought was a pretty striking title, and that it was going to be a history of America from the perspective of black conservatives. And I thought that was an interesting idea. And he wanted to interview me for the film. So I interviewed with him, and he disappeared. I didn't hear from him for several months. It's not uncommon, John, for young filmmakers to come to me and tell me they have this wonderful project. I spent some time with them, and I never hear from them again, and I assumed it was going to be this kind. This guy calls me about 3 months later, and he says, remember me? And I kind of barely did. And he said, let me come by and show you the footage. And you've seen the film, John, and he showed it to me, and I loved the way it was shot in black and white. He'd only interviewed one other person, and I loved the way he had done it. And I said, how far are you along towards getting this film? And to make a long story short, if this were a baseball game, he was in the top half of the first inning. I said, how much money do you have? He said, I have none. How much do you think it'll take? He said, about $500,000. I said, let me raise the money for you. Let me get involved. Let me control the project as executive producer, co-write it, and let's get this thing done. And so it took us about 2.5 years to do that, and I did. And John, I got to tell you something. The movie so far has grossed earnings of 7 times its cost, and that was before it launched on iTunes, on Amazon Prime, and before it became available on Walmart, both online and in stores. The movie has done, by Hollywood terms, anytime a movie does 3 times its cost, it's a successful film. 7 times is mind-boggling. Yet, there have been 3 best of documentary year-end lists that just came out within the last few weeks. Uncle Tom not mentioned on any of them, even though Uncle Tom has a higher IMDb rating, International Movie Database rating, than any film on any of the 3 lists. Moreover, I looked at the IMDb ratings, John, of the last 10 winners of Best Film, Best Documentary Oscars. Not a single one of them has an IMDb rating in the 9s, and Uncle Tom has a rating 9.0. So it is more popular from a viewer perspective than any film that won an Oscar in the last 10 years, more popular from a viewer perspective than any of the films listed on 3 major year-end best documentaries of the 2020 year lists, and completely ignored.
Completely. It actually affirms. Completely ignored. It affirms the message of the movie that you can't have an intelligent, healthy discussion about conservatism in the black community because the media won't allow it to happen. They ignore it. They suffocate it. They cancel it.
Right. It's, and you know, John, I'm those who doesn't. I don't look for the worst possible reason for anything. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe the reason my film didn't make IndieWire. IndieWire is probably the leading publication for independent films in the country. It didn't make IndieWire's list. IndieWire had 15 films on it. I said, okay, maybe the problem is that Uncle Tom hasn't been viewed, hasn't had as many viewer reviews as these other films, so therefore they don't know about it.
Yeah.
So I looked at it. The film on the list that has the most number of reviews is one called Social Dilemma, 58,000, by far more reviews than any other film on the list. The second highest is called Athlete A, with 6,000 plus. My film has 4,000. The rest of the films on the list range from 56 to 2,000. So there are only 2 films on this list that seem to have more reader reviews, which I would think would translate into how many people see the film. And so it's not that. It's just been completely ignored.
It's unbelievable. It's so indicative of what we've seen over the last 6 and 7 years, where cancel culture ignores the extraordinary capabilities and discussion and achievements. I think one of the interviews I saw you do recently, you talked about the difference between Noah from the Comedy Channel and Ben Carson. And Ben Carson has this extraordinary level of achievement. No one's just done a show. I mean, a good show. I mean, people have he's made a lot of famous a lot of fame from it. But the society barely pays attention to Dr. Ben Carson anymore. When does this change? How do we change this? When do we realize that this is nothing more than ignoramus and censorship?
Well, that's what the movie explores, and you hear these black people. Some of them are older black people. People like Herman Cain is in there, Alan West is in there,
right.
And they talk about their own experiences. And it's really a love letter to America. It isn't a whitewashing, pardon the expression, of America. It isn't
right.
saying that America doesn't have flaws, but for crying out loud, it's saying that we are quintessentially Americans, meaning black people, and that we have struggled mightily to become the success that we are. You know, Walter Williams once told me that black people in America have come further ahead from further behind, arguably, than any other people in the history of the world. If black people were a separate country, our gross GDP would be the 15th or 16th highest gross GDP in the world. In the 90s, a black Harvard sociologist who's still there, and every sociologist I've ever met is left-wing. This guy's no different. He voted twice for Obama.
Right.
In the 90s, John, he said America, despite its flaws, is now the least racist majority white society in all of the world, provides more opportunities and more legal protections for blacks than any other country in the world, including all of those of Africa. Now, he said that in the 90s. That was before Obama got elected, let alone reelected. And speaking of whom, Obama, as you know, is featured in the film.
He is, absolutely.
And one of the reasons we put him in the film is because of all the hope and promise that America, in my opinion, thought that we had achieved when Obama got elected. Martin Luther King is mentioned in the film. In the early 60s, he gives an interview, and he says, "I am surprised at the racial progress I've seen in America over the last 2 years. Things are changing so quickly that we might be able to have a black president in about 40 years. He said, there are black people who are qualified right now to be president, but because of the conditions of the country, you can't expect that. But in 40 years' time, I believe we could become, there could be a black president." He didn't say in 40 years' time there could be a black president of a Ivy League university,
right.
There could be a black coach of Notre Dame, there could be black people who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, all of which have happened, by the way. He said the pinnacle, the mountaintop, is the presidency. He did it.
Isn't that amazing?
And Obama got
and
a
he was right on the money in terms of the time. It was 40 years.
And got a almost to the year.
Yes.
And Obama got a higher percentage of the white vote than John Kerry did. So cut it out. There was a 2007 poll, Gallup. This is when Obama and Hillary are duking it out. On the Republican side, John McCain and Mitt Romney are duking it out. And Gallup asked, "Under what circumstances would you never, what percentage of you would never vote for a black person, never vote for a woman," referring to Hillary, "never vote for a Mormon," referring to Romney, "never vote for somebody who would be 72 years of age when he becomes president," referring to McCain. 5% of Americans said they would never vote for a black person. 11% said they would never vote for a female. 24% said they would never vote for a Mormon. 42% said they would never vote for somebody that old when he became president. So Obama had a smaller hurdle than these three white politicians.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
So racism has never been a less significant factor in American life than the year 2020. But you look at the streets, you look at the people going out in the streets and yelling and screaming, you would think the opposite.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. And 1997, Time Magazine and CNN did an extensive poll survey of black teens and white teens on racism. And they asked both of them, is racism a major problem in America? Again, 1997, so 23 years ago. And both said yes, not too surprisingly. But then they asked the black teens, John, is racism a major problem, a small problem, or no problem in your own daily life? 89% of the black teens said racism was a small problem or no problem in my own daily life.
Wow.
In fact, more black teens than white teens said failure to take advantage of available opportunities is a bigger problem than racism. Again, more black teens said yes to that proposition than did white teens. So what are we talking about here? I've been on the air for almost 30 years, and in 30 years, I've tried to get Jesse Jackson on for a sit-down interview, won't do it. Louis Farrakhan won't do it. Sharpton won't do it. Maxine Waters won't do it. But one time I was able to get one of these so-called black leaders to do a sit-down interview with me, and it was Kwesi Mfume. We didn't do it in studio. It was on the phone. He, at the time, Kwesi Mfume was the president of the NAACP,
right.
And I was surprised he agreed to come on, but he did. My first question out of the gate, John, Mr. Mfume, as between the presence of white racism or the absence of black fathers, which poses the bigger threat to the black community? To his credit, without missing a beat, he said the absence of black fathers.
Mm.
Now, the question is, why are 70% of black kids born without a father married to the mother in the house, as opposed to 25% in 1965. I argue that the welfare state has incentivized women to marry the government and has allowed men to abandon their financial and moral responsibilities.
Very powerful message in the documentary. Yeah.
We're not even having that discussion.
No,
but,
we're not.
But George Floyd dies, we go into the streets, and there's all this protesting. Never mind the lack of data. The data are not there. We're having a discussion about whether or not there's widespread evidence of voter fraud. The Democrats want widespread evidence of voter fraud. Well, there isn't any evidence, let alone widespread evidence, of systemic racism against black people by the police, yet they're out there in the streets burning and yelling and screaming. It's bizarre.
Why is that? When you look out, I mean, you've done a lot of thinking, and I think you answer some of this in the documentary, but, and remarkably, you started this about 2.5 years, almost 3 years before George Floyd's death, correct?
Right.
Why is it that we keep having these tinder fire moments where the media, the Democratic politicians, and the African-American community have these moments of rage? What is leading to it? If they don't feel racism a problem, right? That's how they answer the poll questions. Mm-hmm. What is leading it? Is it manufactured?
I think it is manufactured. Thomas Sowell put it this way. He said, racism is not dead, but it's on life support, kept alive by Democrats, by media, that need to have racism for their own purposes. The reason that the politicians like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Barack Obama pull out the race cards is that they know if they can get black people to not think about the quality of education, not think about safety, not thinking about bad economic policy, but think only and solely about race and racism, we can get 95% of these guys to pull the lever for us. That's their MO. The media does it for ratings. And I'm sure a lot of young people sincerely believe that race and racism are major problems in America because they've been trained by what I call the access of indoctrination, Hollywood, academia, and media. That's how they've been raised. But if you ask yourself on a day-to-day basis on what really matters, what is stopping a black person, a female, a gay person from succeeding in America? And the answer is nothing, not very much. We all have different advantages and weaknesses, but the biggest advantage is being born to a mom and a dad in the home. A black kid who is poor, born to a mother and father in the home, will have a better life outcome than a white kid raised by a single mom who is middle class. So the question we ought to be asking ourselves is, what can we do to enhance our educational system, K-12? Answer is choice in school, but the Democrats are adamantly opposed to it, believe that it undermines education, public education, and the Democratic Party is wedded to the teachers' union. So the number one route to the middle class is not to become a boxer like Mike Tyson, or to become a basketball player like LeBron James. I know these are successful stories out of the hood, but the average person coming out of the hood, John, is going to do it the old-fashioned way through hard work and education. And we ought to be asking ourselves, why do we have 13 public high schools in Baltimore where 0% of kids can do math at grade level, and another 6 where only 1% can?
Unbelievable.
And yet the Democrats oppose choice, even though polls show the majority of urban parents, black and brown parents, want school choice. Majority of white Democrats who wouldn't put their kid in a public school on a bet don't want choice in public school, in public education. So why is it that black people are pulling that lever like automatons for the Democratic Party when they oppose choice, couldn't care less about porous borders, even though unskilled illegal aliens compete for jobs that would otherwise be held by unskilled black and brown workers, and couldn't care less about the job-killing damage that policies like the minimum wage are doing, and they still want a $15 minimum wage? I go on and on and on.
But the
film is hopeful. The film is a love letter to America. What the film says is, you are part and parcel of America. One of my favorite quotes in the film is made by a guy named Kingface, who's sitting on a couch, you might remember, and he said, you know, we own this place too. Our blood is on this soil.
That's right.
And we've shed blood in every single war, including the Revolutionary War. In fact, the first casualty was a black man, Crispus Attucks.
Isn't that amazing? There was a guy in the film that really jumped out to me, and you talked about, you know, there's a stereotypical path. You get out of the hood because you're going to become an NBA star, an NFL star, baseball star, whatever it is. But you had some role models in there, and there was a businessman, I'm going to draw a blank, his name, Chad Jackson, I think his name was.
Yeah,
and
right.
He's just a guy that built himself and his small business contractor from the ground up, and he, you know, he's inspiring, and he's he has a dignity and a calmness to him. And you say to yourself, why can't we have more role models like this? And oh, by the way, he's conservative, it turns out. You wouldn't know, but he's conservative.
And that's right. And he really is the backbone of the film. He's the spirit of the film. He's the star of the film. And he's a contractor in Dallas, as you pointed out. And he's a Christian and has always been a Democrat. And one time told a fellow Christian he didn't like Democrats. And the fellow Christian said, "Have you read the party platforms of both parties?" And Chad said no. And he did. After he read him, he said, "Damn, I'm a Republican." And it's about the grief he got from friends and family after
that's what
he
was
converted.
So telling. Social rejection and isolation just because he exercised his will. I mean, it's a form of reverse racism that you're not allowed to think for yourself. And it's remarkable. You talked about school choice, and we just had a story at Just the News a couple of days ago there was $58 billion new in the stimulus bill for education, but it had a prohibition that none of it could go to vouchers or any of the elements that make up the school choice agenda. And so there was a ban on it. And you just have to ask yourself, how many times does the community watch the Congress and the Democrats do this and realize they're not listening to what the community is asking and wanting and seeing work? It's a remarkable thing. Do you think Donald Trump has had any impact in changing the dynamism in the African-American community, opening a path for them to at least consider Republicans?
Absolutely. He has increased his share of the black vote to levels we haven't seen since maybe Gerald Ford. He's had the courage to go to the inner city. I campaigned with him in Cleveland at a black church.
I remember that.
Out loud.
Yeah, that's right.
And he talked about vouchers there. And so he made an attempt. I've always felt, as you saw in the film, Republicans write us off. Republicans don't even try, and Democrats write us off. And Donald Trump made an effort and dramatically shifted the amount of people of color, to use that term, who voted for him. And maybe that's going to cause a movement. Now, if you look at the percentage of black votes in the last 4 election cycles, it's edged up little by little by little towards being less and less Democratic. Still overwhelmingly, but little by little it's changing. And I think it's done so for the reason I mentioned. Racism is no longer a major problem in America. And the real problems are what's going on with these crappy urban schools, and what can we do to encourage marriage, encourage men to step up to their obligations to their children. Those are the major problems facing the black community. I have said, John, that if you get out a magic wand, wave it over America, remove every smidgen of racism from the hearts of white America, it's all gone now. Do we still have 70% of black kids raised outside of wedlock? Yes. Do we still have a 50% urban dropout rate? Yes. Do we still have 25% of young black men with criminal records either arrested in jail, on parole, or on probation? Yes. Then I submit racism is not the problem, and trying to stamp it out is not the solution.
Yeah, it's such an important point, and we're missing the such enormous levers of opportunity to fix communities that, you know, the constant black-on-black violence, the fear of living in even in your own neighborhood, in your own home. There was an interesting stat. You mentioned the 70%, and that's a jaw-dropping number, and it's been growing for years. But before the Great Society began, you had a statistic in the film. I think it was only 25%. So with all of the help of the Great Society program, that trend has actually gotten worse, not better.
It's made its worth. That's why I say the welfare state has caused women to marry the government and has allowed men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. And you talk
such
about wasted
statement.
Energy and wasted time. The three arguably most powerful so-called black leaders in America are Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and Louis Farrakhan. All three have very important stories to tell about their fathers. In the case of Jesse Jackson, Jesse Jackson's mother was a teen mom who got impregnated by the married man who lived next door. Jesse Jackson grew up in South Carolina. At the time, growing up without a dad was rare. He was taught it. Jesse ain't got no daddy. Jesse ain't got no daddy. I'm convinced one of the reasons this man does not see the tremendous progress that has happened in race relations over the last 30 years is because of the pain that he experienced growing up without a father. And I'm not a psychologist, but I got to imagine it's done some damage. Al Sharpton, nice middle-class life until his father abandoned the family, down to the hood. Louis Farrakhan. Farrakhan's mother was estranged from her husband, had a boyfriend, took back up with Farrakhan's father, didn't want the boyfriend to know that she got pregnant, and tried to abort Farrakhan with a coat hanger. Now, all three of these men could and should tell this story because it is the most important story we should be telling now. You should step up to your obligations to your children. Black people, unfortunately, are not doing it. There's a wonderful book called His Father's Faith, written by a religious writer named James Robeson.
Sure.
And he wanted to improve the morale at the prison where he was a chaplain. He went to a local prison, greeting card company, and asked for 500 greeting cards for Mother's Day. And the greeting card company thought it would be good PR, so he gave him 500 free cards. He went to the prison, gave them to the men, they filled them out, and morale improved. So Father's Day rolls around, John, and you know where I'm going with this story. He goes to the same company, gets 500 cards. Not a single inmate, not one, wanted to fill out a card and send it to Dad. Not one. Now, what does it tell you?
Yeah, completely disassociated. It's an unbelievable dynamic, and it's a sad dynamic, and it has to get reversed. I mean, the greatest form of racism today is failed schools and in incomplete families. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
You know, here's another one. I always try to use left-wing people to make my points whenever I can. Barack Obama said, a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and to commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in jail. Now, I read Obama's first book, Dreams of My Father. He was pained because he was not raised by his biological father. It really caused him a great deal of anguish. That's why he wrote the book.
Right.
And he has talked about lack of fathers, but not very often, because whenever he does, there's pushback. He's accused of blaming the victim, so he backs away.
Right. No, it is remarkable. There was a moment in the movie, I think it was Candace Owen may have said it. Forgive me if I have the wrong person, but she said something to the fact that I'm like an alarm clock. You don't want to hear it, but at some point you know you got to wake up.
That was Candace.
That sounds just like her, Candace. Too. She's an amazing...
Isn't she amazing?
Oh, God, the dynamism and her intellect is remarkable. Is there a wake-up moment ahead for us? We're about to head into an era, if President Trump leaves office, where priorities like reparations, killing school choice, increasing the welfare state are going to be the priorities of a Democratic Congress and of a Democratic administration. How does all the important points that you make in this movie, the real solutions to what ails America, how do we keep them on the radar? How do we get them into the agenda? How do we make them happen when those in at least the Democratic power are going to try to create the antithetical agenda?
We have to be active. We have to tell the truth. I am honored to be on the board of directors of Blexit. That's the organization that Candace Owens has set up.
Right.
There are now about chapters in more than half the states, and we're trying to get the message out. Rethink your assumptions. Who is best for you? What policies will best give you the tools it makes for you to compete in America? Complaining about racism, maligning the police, is that going to improve safety? There's something called the Ferguson effect. The Ferguson effect is when officers pull back for fear of being called racist. The bad guys know that. Also, what happens is this business about the police out to get you causes young black men who believe this stuff to interact in a very wary way with the police. I mean, why would you cooperate with the police if you, in fact, feel they're going to kill you once they pull you over? So it's doing a great deal of damage to how the police are perceived by young black men, how young black men perceive the police, and the data, one more time, are simply not there. If anything, the police are more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on a black person than on a white person. There's a black economist at Harvard named Rolling Fryer.
Nice.
He just knew, John, that the police were mowing down people just because they were black. And he was surprised no one had done a study to corroborate it. So he thought he would do one. He was shocked.
He said,
these are the most shocking findings of my professional career. Not only are the police not engaging in systemic racism, if anything, they're more hesitant, more reluctant to use deadly force against blacks than against whites or even Hispanics. So knock it off. Work hard. I've seen graphs of how much time black kids versus Hispanic kids versus white kids versus Asian kids spend every night. Homework is night and day. Even Hispanic kids are spending more time on homework than black kids. If there's a correlation between how many hours you spend on your free throw and your jump shot, wouldn't you think there's a correlation between how well you're going to do in your subjects, between how much homework you do? I mean, these are not hard things, but not having a mother and a father in the house and being influenced by a bunch of knuckleheads and by people like Jesse Jackson and Sharpton telling you you're a victim, this isn't helping anything.
Yeah, no, it's not at all. Black Lives Matter has become such a force. It's certainly taken 4 years, but 2020 was the year of its extraordinary rise. And yet, just a few days ago, a majority black city, the city of Detroit, sued Black Lives Matter, saying that it engaged in a civil conspiracy to turn things violent and endanger the lives of police and public. Really a remarkable lawsuit, a remarkable rejection of what seemed to be everybody's sort of poster child. Let's just give a lot of money to this group and it'll make the problems go away. But do you think that's the beginning of an awakening of a, hey, we need to have a different conversation here. We can't let violence and show stage protesting dominate this debate. What did you think of the city of Detroit's lawsuit?
Well, I'm not surprised that somebody finally filed something. Here's what bothers me. I think probably the most influential black person in America today is Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He probably has more influence. People probably listen to him more than anybody. Look at his Twitter feed,
right.
His social
yeah.
media following. He's got a bigger foot than anybody else.
Right.
I am confident, John, if Barack Obama were in the room as you and I are having our conversation, and he were being honest, he would be nodding his head at every damn thing you and I just now said. Here's why I know this. I said I read his book. In his book, there's a character named Ray. And Ray is very much like Al Sharpton, always bitching and moaning and whining about racism. And Obama chastises him and says, knock it off. Maybe at some time we needed that, but not now, meaning things have changed. Obama ran for Congress in Chicago when he was a state senator. He got his clock cleaned. He ran against Bobby Rush, a former Black Panther. And the reason he ran against him is because he thought he was too much like Sharpton, played the race card, and he thought he was irresponsible. Now, as I mentioned, Obama gave a talk at a black church when he was a senator before he decided to run. And he was talking about how far we had to go. And he said this, the Moses generation, referring to the generation of Martin Luther King,
right.
The Moses generation, he said at this black church, has, quote, gotten us 90% of the way there, end of quote. And I thought that was reasonable. Because I saw a Fox opinion poll, John, 2002, 8% of Americans believe Elvis is still alive or that there's a strong possibility that he is. So as far as I'm concerned, we can write off 8%.
I think so.
Maybe
there's 2%
of Americans left to go. Right. And he said, the Joshua generation, my generation, has to get us that additional 10%. Now, that's before he became president, let alone reelected. So don't you think we kind of sliced into that 10% a little bit? And I read a very long and thorough piece in either Time or Newsweek, I forget which one, about when Obama decided to run for president. He brought in all his homies, Valerie Jarrett and David Plouffe and Axelrod and everybody, to decide if he should run. The article said race wasn't even mentioned.
Isn't that
amazing?
That
is how serious Obama thought racism really was in America. And I'll give you another example. When Obama decided to run, his first 60 Minutes interview was with Steve Croft. I'm at home by myself. And Croft said to him, Senator, if you don't win this race, will it be because of racism? And I sat back, I folded my arms, I said, let's see what this man says. And he said, no, if I don't get the nomination, if I don't win this race, it will be because I have not articulated a vision for America that Americans can embrace. And I said, wow, hallelujah. I'm not going to vote for a tax spend regulate Democrat, but at least he's not what I call a victocrat. Fast forward, what happens, John? The Cambridge police acted stupidly. Remember that?
I do.
That was when his friend Skip Gates, the Harvard professor, had come home from vacation, forgot his door key, broke into his own home with his taxi driver. An astute neighbor calls 911, doesn't recognize him. Don't you want your neighbors to do that?
Yes.
And the police officer shows up very politely, asks him to come out of the house to make sure that he and the house belong to each other.
Right.
And instead of politely cooperating, he says, I'll come out if your mama tells me to come out, or something like that.
Wow.
Obama knows this man, Skip Gates, for a long time. They're friends.
Yep.
And instead of Obama saying, I spoke to my friend Skip Gates last night. I said, Skip, you're a role model for crying out loud. You're a Harvard tenured professor.
Yep.
This is how you treat a cop who's doing his job and politely asks you a civil instruction? Is that the message we need to tell our young black men? Instead, what did Obama do? The Cambridge police acted stupidly.
Yep.
It ticked off police officers all around
the
country. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Oh, America has its own problems. There's this place called Ferguson. Because the politician Obama, John, knows he needs to play the race card to get that 95% monolithic vote.
The intellectual on him knows the opposite, right? That's what you learned from the book.
He had a white girlfriend in his book.
Yeah.
And she was came from a good family, came from a very prestigious family. They loved him.
Yeah.
They embraced him. He dumped her because he wanted a political career and thought she would be a liability.
Wow.
So don't give me this crap about racism holding him back.
Yeah, no, that's it. You know, it must have been 7-8 years ago. I was the editor of the Washington Times, and Tom Sowell dropped by, and he said something to me, and it's been a long time, but it still resonates in my mind today, that the single greatest tool of repression for the African-American community is the false ideology of victimology, that the way Democrats and intellectuals continue to make a victimization narrative for everything that happens in the African-American community actually represses the ability of the community to really address what it wants to do. I know you hold Tom Sowell in such enormous regard. Are we stuck in this chronic victimology narrative that we can't get out and see the silliness that we're trapped in and how we can move forward? Is victimology sort of become a repressive tool?
I think it has. It certainly has become a tool that Democrats, again, use to manipulate you. Harry Reid once said, I don't see how anybody who's Hispanic would become a Republican. And when Joe Biden said to that talk show host, if you don't know whether or not you want to vote for Trump or me, you ain't really black.
Right.
And he got hammered. I have no idea why the man got hammered. Black people and black Democrats have been saying this for decades.
Yeah.
Just the year before, Ayanna Pressley, one of the squad members, she was at a Netroots conference, and she said, and I'm paraphrasing, but she said, we don't need any more black faces who don't want to be a black voice. We don't need any more Hispanic faces who don't want to be Hispanic voice. We don't need any more gay faces who don't want to be a gay voice. What is that saying other than what Joe Biden said?
Yeah.
There's only one way to be black, be brown, or to be gay, and that is to think like us. Otherwise, you're not really a black or brown or a gay person.
Monolithism.
Same thing.
Yeah, no, it's such an extraordinary.
I'm in California, John, and a guy named Ward Connolly, a black man who was married to a white woman, led the fight to get rid of race-based preferences here in California, called Proposition 209.
Right.
And a political opponent named Diane Watson, she was a local lawmaker, but later on she ran for the House, U.S. House, and got elected. She said this to him: let me tell you why you want to get rid of affirmative action. You're married to a white woman. You have no ethnic pride. You want to be white. That's why you want to get rid of affirmative action. The next day when reporters asked her if she said it, she said, that's right, I said it, and I don't take it back, and never did. And then ran for a House, as I mentioned, and got elected and got reelected a few times. I mean, Scotty Beam, David Duke couldn't say that and get away with it.
No.
Can you imagine if Trump had said something like that?
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
Not even a chance. Nope. Yeah, it's a double standard. There's no doubt about it. The thought police in the media and in the intellectual intelligentsia, political elites are there. The real question for all of us is, at what point do the masses in America that don't subscribe to all of the silliness and the intelligentsia, at what point do they take the country back? And do you see, as you look out over the next couple of years, what are the opportunities for progress? What are you looking to measure and see happen to get a different debate going in this country, get a different set of solutions in place?
Well, I see a growing movement towards school choice, and part of it, ironically, is because of the coronavirus pandemic. I think a lot of parents are beginning to see the crap that their kids are learning, all the indoctrination their kids are learning. So I'm seeing a growing movement towards choice in school. Hopefully, there'll be more pressure to have local school boards adopt choice. President Trump was a champion of choice. Betsy DeVos, a big champion of choice. So I'm seeing that. I'm also seeing, when I look at the polls, the majority of black people don't support defunding the police, don't support these young people in the streets yelling and screaming about police brutality. The normal people recognize that the police are necessary. I got a quote of Tupac Shakur. He said, black people need the police more than anybody else because we have more crime than anybody else.
Yeah.
And by the way, Tupac, speaking of him, he once said this. He grew up also without a father. He said, I know a lot of white people love to hear black people say this. I don't like to say this out loud, he said. But I know for a fact that had I had a father in my life, I would have been more disciplined and I would have been more confident, end of quote. Now, have you ever seen anybody who looked more confident than this guy?
Never.
Here he is admitting he wasn't confident because he did not have a father.
That's right. Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Under the shell. Well, Larry, first, congratulations on the success of Uncle Tom. It may not get the validation from the Hollywood elitists, but it has gotten the validation of such a large number of Americans. It's such an important dialogue. Remind people how they can get this. It cracked Amazon recently. What are all the ways?
Yeah,
if you haven't watched it, you can see it.
The easiest way is just to go to UncleTom.com. You can also go to iTunes. It's also on Amazon Prime. And on Walmart, both online and on shelves. But probably the easiest way is UncleTom.com.
UncleTom.com. Well, we're going to do something special this week here at Just the News and offer an opportunity for our readers to engage and watch this. And we're just so proud of the movie. We're so proud of the dialogue that it raised. And when you think it was conceived 2-3 years ago, it couldn't have hit any better time than the summer of 2020 when we had all of the crises that we faced. And we wish you well. You're such an important voice and for all of America. And we're just so glad that you're educating us and inspiring us to have a conversation that a lot of people are afraid to have.
Well, John, thank you for giving me so much time. I really do appreciate it.
Well, it's an important conversation. We'll talk to you after the first year, and we wish you a happy new year.
You too. Happy new year.
All right, folks, we're going to come back in a few seconds and wrap things up for the day. But first, a few messages from our great advertisers and sponsors. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. The rest of this week, we're going to be playing some of my favorite podcasts of the year. I hope you enjoy that, and we'll be back early next year, January 4th, to start a new round of podcasts. If we have breaking news this week, of course, we'll whip out a special edition of the podcast. But absent that, we're going to stay focused on letting you cherish your family and spend some downtime during this holiday week, and we'll play some of our favorites. Hope you enjoyed Larry Elder. A lot of food for thought in that interview. Tell your friends about that. There's a special offer on Just the News right now to listen to the podcast, download the movie Uncle Tom after listening to the podcast. I hope that's helpful to you. And we wish you a happy new year, a blessed new year. Enjoy this holiday week between Christmas and New Year. Enjoy your family. We'll be back next week with a whole new slate of John Solomon Reports podcasts. Yep, from your favorite folks at Just the News. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust. And the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code JUSTNEWS to save 10%. Folks, we're sponsored today by Donors Trust, the tax-friendly way to preserve your charitable giving. In times of crisis, those with a giving spirit and a desire to build up civil society find ways to be helpful. And that's when it's good to have a charitable resource ready to deploy when they're needed most. Donors Trust offers donor-advised funds or giving accounts. You can use these funds as your own charitable investment account and manage your charitable giving in a way that's smart, tax-advantaged, aligned with your values, and private. Donors Trust clients are using their funds to support charities helping their local communities while also using their giving account to simultaneously support think tanks and liberty-minded organizations that believe our constitutional rights shouldn't get lost in a time of emergency. Now is the time to take a closer look at Donors Trust and join their community of liberty-minded donors by opening a donor advised fund. Go to donorstrust.org/justnews for the ultimate survival guide to charitable giving and learn how a donor advised fund can preserve your ability to give to the charities you love. That's donorstrust.org/justnews.